From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar. Today, our weekly discussion with BlackAgendaReport.com columnist Margaret Kimberly. Her column this week, Trump and Russia, the Perfect Lie, takes a look at the ongoing battle between the president and Democrats and the media over his expressed intent to seek better relations with Russia.
The anti-Russia campaign being waged by the war party, some Democrats, some Republicans, and the corporate media is getting more and more extreme by the day. And I wrote about this because I wanted to talk about the things about Trump that make this easier. We had an election that was, you predicted it, but most people did not see Trump winning. I think Democrats were confident that Hillary Clinton would be the president. So I think there's still this element of shock that this happened, that Donald Trump is the president and not Hillary Clinton. Trump's victory also upended a lot of plans that one wing of the ruling class had and were confident of continuing. He spoke of about changing the relationship with Russia, about having a detente and subduing Russia, having regime change there, was a plan of Hillary Clinton and the war party. And all of the actions while she was Secretary of State and afterwards, instigating the coup in Ukraine, moving NATO troops right up to Russia's borders, when Putin reacted and annexed Crimea, the sanctions against Russia, all of these things were meant to do lasting damage to the Russian government.
Let's not forget the H word, too, because let's see. We have Saddam Hussein, Hitler. We have Gaddafi, Hitler. We have Assad, Hitler. Okay, now we start to call Putin Hitler. You think they have an idea what's coming next?
Yes, and when you call somebody Hitler, what's the next logical step?
In comes the U.S. Air Force.
So he was, you know, and Trump was Putin's puppet, so this was a Hillary Clinton campaign theme. So she loses, and that means that the plan against Russia is in danger. Trump said NATO was obsolete. That plan is in danger. He talked about getting rid of the trade deals. That plan is in danger. So Trump has, Trump has a lot of enemies. Now, we have to talk about where he is to blame. He did things like he bragged about having done deals in Russia. He hosted a beauty contest in Moscow, and he wanted to do business deals there but never succeeded at it. So he's hoisted on his own petard a bit. But mostly, this is a plan to get back to where they had hoped to be after the election day. Now, the other problem with Trump is his policies, the people he's put into place, the fact that, you know, Republican presidents are often, since the 60s, it is Republican presidents who have presented their party as the white people's party. And it's usually with a wink and a nudge and code words and euphemism, but Trump goes and gets, Steve Bannon, a guy from Breitbart, a white supremacist, to be one of the faces of his administration. The ban of the travel ban on the seven mostly Muslim nations, the wall with Mexico, and so on. So people have reason, good reason, to oppose him. And so all of this gets to be combined as a means of ratcheting up anxiety about his government. And he's frankly not competent. He also didn't get good people around him. George W. Bush has reared his ugly head lately, and I'm reminded that he was not competent and prepared to be president. But being an establishment guy, they got good people around him, and they just sort of talked him through it. But Trump gets, Steve Bannon and his son-in-law and, other people who just are not ready for the big leagues and not ready for this attack. So they are under surveillance. And then Trump says on Twitter that Obama tapped his phone. And I'm sure he was under surveillance of some kind. I'm sure there's no order of, where you could find where Obama tapped his phone. That's not how it would work. But I mentioned it last week. There was a New York Times article about, of course, it assumed that it was true that there was Russian interference in the election and that the Obama team were saving information. So it's not surprising that Jeff Sessions, the attorney general, was asked in his confirmation hearings about whether he'd spoken to any Russians. They already knew that he had. They knew that Flynn had talked to the Russian ambassador, which is not illegal. It is not wrong. This is what happens when there's a transition. But the media have whipped up this frenzy. Now they've turned the Russian ambassador into a villain. And they'll say things like, well, he tries to expand Russian influence. And I'm like, well, that's what ambassadors do.
It's your job.
And even things that are perfectly normal have been turned into evil acts. So all of this plays into the Democrats have a good reason to keep wanting to whip this up. They are terrified that their constituents will start to ask questions about how they lost. How they lost the House, how they lost the Senate, how they lost state houses, how they then lost the presidency, the only thing they had left. And by blaming the Russians for everything, by making Putin a villain, they have committed this perfect crime of both continuing the antagonism against Russia and saving themselves. In the short term, saving themselves, what they need to do is talk honestly about what happened. So we have this dangerous situation that grows more dangerous by the day.
Let's go back to 1948, the election then when Tom Dewey, New York governor, Republican candidate, was such a shoo-in to win the election against Harry Truman that newspapers printed the headlines that he won. And it turned out that he didn't. In a squeaker, he lost the election. And then the Republicans, Richard Nixon and others, start with who lost Red China? And the whole bit, more or less ushering in earnest, although Truman was more than just an accomplice, he was a motivator of what ended up being McCarthyism at that time. And we're seeing a replay of that, more or less, where the people who lost the election, not just the presidency, the Senate, the House of Representatives, governorships, state legislatures, and the whole positioning for the 2020 redistricting for Congress, the stage has been set for the Republicans to dominate that. All of that lost by the leadership of the DNC, and they're deflecting. Mm-hmm. Instead of being held accountable to Democratic constituents, like, oops, we blew it. Instead, as they, by the way, embrace George Bush, every Republican that came over to Hillary Clinton's campaign, etc., thereby there's no more ideological animosity towards those Republicans who were the raison up until the November 8th. You know, all of this is the morass, and it's not covered at all. Instead, you misstated before, by the way, it's not Trump accusing Obama of tapping him. It's Trump making an evidence-free accusation, or Trump lying that Obama. That's how they're reporting it.
Yes, that's true. It's true. And, and then Trump, of course, he'll, tweet that Obama tapped his phone, but then he'll tweet about, his old TV show. And so people get to disregard him. And that, it's unfortunate, too, for many reasons. But, it's absurd. And people respond by saying, the president doesn't have the power to tap anybody's phone. Well, this is, of course, the president wouldn't be the one to do it. But, and Glenn Ford had a great piece also this week in Black Agenda Report talking about that. But there is a concerted effort to demobilize any support Trump may have to keep up this hysteria about Russia. And it keeps him from doing, should he really be serious about those things I talked about that he wanted to do, and makes it hard for him. So while he says he wants to change the relationship with Russia, he's been using the same rhetoric about Russian aggression and so forth that the Obama team often used. So he's been thrown off, and if he did want to do it, he's been rendered unable to do that, and that's the whole point of it. But so now we have Hillary Clinton, I feared, because she was so openly hawkish and talked about a no-fly zone over Syria, and which would mean shooting down Russian planes. I was afraid of her getting us into war, but I think that we may be headed that way anyhow. And no one is talking about that either. And this this anti-Russian propaganda has just been perfected so much. I don't know how to fight against it, with everything being blamed on Putin and Russia, and the Democratic Party joining in so they can hide their incompetence and arrogance, and the fact that they show no alternative to the Republican Party, which is why they keep losing. And instead of fighting for a $15 an hour minimum wage, or realizing that Bernie Sanders was more popular than they thought, because what he said really touched on things that were of concern to people, and adding that to their platform, no. They want to stay in power and still be the corporatists, and make cut deals with Republicans, cut deals with corporate interests, and while pretending to be the defenders of justice in this country. And clearly that's not working anymore, but they don't know what else to be. And I think we're seeing the end of the Democratic Party, unfortunately, though they will take us all down with them before they quite rightfully disappear.
You know, and then there's an international context to all of this. Today, particularly a very busy day, it's Thursday, there was a press conference after a summit meeting held by the foreign ministers of Germany and Russia, Foreign Minister Gabriel and Lavrov, in Moscow, held a press conference today. And the German foreign minister is, you know, talking against this whole, you know, he replaced Steinmeier, who was looking at what was happening at the border of Russia with NATO and raising questions. He was replaced by Gabriel, and Gabriel's raising essentially the same question, saying, look, you know, we need to start working on, you know, doing business together and focusing on things that we can partner on and all of this. And then you also had a press conference by China's foreign minister, Wang Yi, in Beijing. He was asked a question by a journalist at CGTN, because China's going to be hosting the BRICS summit this year in Beijing, what he saw as the role of BRICS going forward, with all of the contradictions that exist with the coup in Brazil and the problems in South Africa and the attempts by the United States to turn India against Russia and China. And he had a very affirmative agenda that he sees China laying out with the BRICS for much tighter economic integration and a drawing in of others. In other words, as the U.S. attempts to get a handle again on hegemony, which Trump seemed to threaten with his position towards Russia, it seems that the rest of the world is just moving forward with rising multipolarity.
Yes, and that's the thing that they fear. This is precisely what they fear, because, you know, China has its own bank now, this rival to the World Bank, and American allies are joining this bank. That's so right. It's, you know, the new Silk Road and the enhanced cooperation between Russia and China, and you can thank the United States for that. They realize they need to be closer and closer. So all of these things lead to this intention of trying to What did Obama always say? Isolating Putin. Putin's not isolated. Americans may not want to talk to him, but that's certainly not true for the rest of the world. And so this this all leads to this situation that we are in now, where where Putin has been demonized. Well, Trump has been demonized, and it's partly his own doing. There are things he needs to be demonized for.
True that.
But, you know, wanting to be friends with Russia is not on that list. And we have this uninformed public. And I was thinking about Mark Twain's quote that if you don't read the newspaper, you're uninformed. If you do read the paper, you're misinformed. And that's where we are now with the corporate media. And I say the word corporate and not people say mainstream media. I think it's important to use the word corporate media because I think that more clearly explains why they're so problematic and why we get nothing but propaganda from them.
Yeah, it also explains, given the political economy of this country, why they have a monopoly position over the public airwaves, and exactly. Explains their orientation supporting the corporate agenda of globalist folks inside the government and elsewhere.
Yes.
You know, your point that Trump is being hamstrung, regardless of what his actual intentions were towards Russia, if they were, in fact, to, and are, in fact, to... you know, reduce tensions and, you know, make more normal relations with Russia, whatever that might mean. You have the installation. There's almost like this body walking around without a head, foreign policy of the United States, that resulted, for example, in the installation of the THAAD missile system in South Korea now, which has China and Russia both upset. This is essentially an anti-missile system that's being installed at the borders of Russia and China, supposedly as a consequence of the firing of four missiles by North Korea. But those four missiles were fired during a joint military drill that looks like an invasion till it stops at the border by the U.S. and not just the U.S. that invaded and bombed the hell out of Korea in 1952, but in 1952, but Japan. For the first time, Japan is now unleashed to take aggressive military moves by the reinterpretation of Article 9 of its constitution, and now it's side by side with the U.S. drilling an invasion of North Korea.
Yeah, and this is very dangerous. And this, you know, we can, I guess I am a blame America first person, but Japan had denounced militarism after World War II, after their terrible defeat, but the United States for, you know, a couple of administrations now has been trying to and succeeding in luring them back in so that they now are this military ally of the U.S. I don't see any problem with North Korea having a missile system. That's their right. We have a missile system.
Oh, okay.
We have, you know, the biggest military on the face of the earth. And for this little country to have weapons, it's a good thing. It, you know, it keeps them from being attacked. I suggest everybody have the ability to defend themselves from U.S. aggression. But yes, this is this attempt to bring in countries like Japan and to antagonize North Korea. All of these things are very, very dangerous. And you know, there's a lot more talk of antagonism against Russia, but there is a huge risk of conflict with China as well. And for the same reasons, you know, when China in the South China Sea, that is to say, near their own territory, establishing these artificial islands and bases, that's to counter U.S. influence. The United States is trying to encircle all of these countries it feels threatened by. And all America has left pretty much is military muscle. And anybody who threatens it, anybody who has the possibility of changing this is an enemy who has to be dispatched. And that's where Trump is. He is a loose cannon in the system, And there is a concerted effort to keep him from doing anything that he planned to do. And this, you know, and these attacks on Trump are not for noble motives. We should be concerned about the ban of these seven mostly Muslim nations. We should be concerned about a multiplicity of issues, about them getting rid of replacing Obamacare, which was bad, with something even worse, about the anti-immigrant legislation and the deporting of people and people who have a right to be here, people with legitimate visas being turned away by these, you know, little Nazi border patrol agents. There are so many things we can talk about. The voter suppression, which may have helped in Trump's victory, but Democrats don't talk about that. I find it interesting. We don't know if voter suppression lost her votes in those Midwestern states that flipped to the Republicans. The Democrats haven't even talked about it. All they do is talk about Putin. They don't talk about people in Wisconsin and Michigan who may have been turned away from the polls. It was the Green Party who counted votes, not the Democrats. So it shows you how bankrupt they are and how little they have to offer. They are rank and file, and that is why they ratchet up the anti-Russia hysteria more and more every day.
You know, if you look at the driving force of U.S. policy in the historical context, it's hard to argue with the fact that its goal is global hegemony. And that's driven, of course, by the folks that own the economies of the countries in the Western constellation, the United States, the EU, and then the various vassal states that are part of that arrangement. And looking forward, of course, almost every economist worthy, you know, of the name is looking at Eurasia as the engine of economic growth over the next perhaps century. And we're talking the landmass from Russia, China, India, and you know, New Silk Road, the Southwest and Southeast Asian countries, etc. And that, you know, where more than half the population of the planet lives, where the resources of Siberia and Western China, the offshore oil along all of that area is placed. And the threat to American hegemony is not manifest in a military encirclement of the U.S. and EU, but rather a military encirclement of Eurasia, from the Baltics to the THAAD system just employed in the Korean Peninsula. That is the arrangement that Trump's mouthing of a desire for better relations with Russia threatens. And we're still seeing activity, apparently not from direction of the White House, that's intensifying the military aspects of that. They continue to make noise about the South China Sea and provocations there, the aggression by Poroshenko in Ukraine, Turkey's attempts to secure parts of Syria, you know, things that are happening on the ground that still advance that movement forward of a military response to the rise of Eurasia. What is it that you think Trump could do to try to get a handle on this, or do you think it's just going to be a runaway train and he's going to be hanging off the caboose or pushed off the caboose at the end?
Well, there's so much. We do need a steady hand in foreign policy, and I think, you know, foreign policy is one place where presidents have a lot of latitude and don't have to go to Congress for permission and votes and so forth. But you'd need to have a coherent team. I'm not sure he has that. You'd have to have the consistent vision. I don't know if he has that either. So it could be possible, and you also need buy-in from the press, and Trump does not help himself. And I call this piece the perfect lie because Trump himself plays into the hands of his rivals. Presidents curry favor with the media for this very reason. so that when they want to make the case for interfering in Ukraine or destroying Libya, I mean, the horrible things that Trump's predecessors have done, they had buy-in from the New York Times and the Washington Post. And Trump does not have that. And by having these food fights with the media, I don't think that's going to change anytime soon. I think it would be possible for him to get them on his side because he's the president, after all, and all these people want to have an in with power more than they really want to be journalists. But that's one of the things that Trump would have to change. And he would have to get people who are more skilled than the people he has in order to put forth an agenda. And, you know, all of these things you mentioned, all of them are caused by the United States. There'd be no Syrian war, this horrible, this five, now six-year long conflict without the Obama administration thinking they could just take over Syria, as an example. So it would be possible, but you would need a different kind of person in order to pull it off.
And further complicating all of that, first of all, we should mention that large parts of Africa and Latin America, where the match has been lit, have been in turmoil as well, and all certainly related to this geopolitical struggle of the United States seeking hegemony and trying to thwart the rising China and the counter-influence of multipolarity to their attempt at hegemony. Looking at the big picture, I'm wondering what people, particularly in the anti-war movement, to staring down the barrel, perhaps, of World War III, can find some way to, on the one hand, shore up the Trump administration's attempts, should they make them, to seek deconflation or better relations with Russia, and also force his hand, calling for him to, you know, respect his campaign promises. I mean, are we powerless as part of the anti-war movement, as, you know, consigned to observer status, or can we take an active role that would help move forward this agenda of, you know, an accommodation to multipolarity, but certainly first avoiding World War III?
Well, I think first the anti-war movement would have to break with the Democratic Party. There are too many people in the anti-war movement who are still allied with the Democrats, despite the fact that Democrats have continued and expanded on the wars of the Bush administration. So I think that would be the first thing that would have to happen. Trump is problematic because while he talks about improving relations with Russia, he will also make statements against China or against Iran. Iran is a particular bugaboo of his, and Iran is a close ally of China and Russia. So he is a problem. I think the anti-war movement has to develop its own ideology, a strong anti-interventionist policy. That has been undermined by these supposedly humanitarian interventions, and sadly, many people who should know better have supported interventions in Libya and Syria and other places because they, you know, the H word, as you put it, turn everybody into a Hitler. And people feel like they have to support things that they should never support. So I think the anti-war movement should be independent of the political system and clearly state an anti-interventionist position and get the people on our side. And this is one of the reasons we have to completely undermine the Democratic Party, because they are also the war party. And they have participated in this anti-Russia campaign so they can promote a pro-war agenda. So we must be independent. We must have consistent anti-interventionist statement, and that must be what we call for.
Margaret Kimberly has a weekly column at blackagendareport.com under the byline Freedom Rider. This week's column, Trump and Russia, the perfect lie. Margaret, thank you very much.
Thank you, Don.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.